Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we are presented by Progressive Insurance. Hit us up on the Canty and Golic Jr. call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. And Gojo, when the news broke about Brian Flores' lawsuit, class action suit against the National Football League, against the Miami Dolphins, the New York Football Giants, and the Denver Broncos, we were all shocked. We were all trying to process it in real time. But one of the key questions that we had was how the NFL would react to this. And it didn't take long for that question to be answered, because the NFL yesterday late afternoon issued a statement in which they said the NFL and our clubs are deeply committed to ensuring equitable employment practices and continuing to make progress in providing equitable opportunities throughout our organizations. The league statement: diversity is at the core of everything we do, and there are few issues on which our clubs and our internal leadership teams spend more time on. We will defend against these claims, which are without merit. And the part that gets me, Gojo, is that the NFL, hours after Brian Flores filed the lawsuit, said the claims were without merit. I still can't understand why they took that position as opposed to saying that they would investigate the claims and they would do everything that they could to get to the bottom of it. But it seems like this is one of those instances where the NFL is circling the wagons to try to defend rather than to acknowledge openly that the issue that we all know, which is the disparity when it comes to hiring practices with black head coaches.
Yeah, Chris, it feels like a little bit of panic on the part of some of the NFL people involved in this, because we've got really allegations on a number of fronts, right? We've got this, which is already egregious and something that people have acknowledged, the NFL's difficulty and poor practices in hiring minority candidates at head coach. Then you've got the allegations from Brian Flores that Miami Dolphins owner Stephen Ross attempted to pay him to lose games. Now you've got Hugh Jackson coming out and alleging the same thing for the Cleveland Browns when he was there. Hugh Jackson, who is currently on SportsCenter right now with L. Duncan and Kevin Negandhi here. The Browns have come out and essentially issued the same statement, basically categorically denying all that. So, Chris, this seems like all of this information coming out, and the NFL knowing the public pressure that is about to mount and the reaction to it. Because we talked to Amber Wilson, ESPN radio host and lawyer, earlier on Canty and Golic Jr., and she said when she read through the 60 pages of this class action lawsuit, that public pressure seemed to be the goal.
I kind of read this as not necessarily a lawsuit where Flores and his team truly believe that they're going to be able to take this all the way, because that's very rare anyways with civil suits. And I do think that there's a very tall mountain to climb here and many hoops to jump through before they would ever even get to a discovery phase, for example, where we would be able to prove this stuff. But the fact that they spent 60 pages kind of laying this out, I really think got it all out there for us in a manner where maybe the public pressure will finally be so great on the NFL that maybe Flores and his team will be able to affect change, even if it's not done by a judge, because frankly, that seems highly unlikely to me.
And so, Chris, that's kind of the refrain that we've heard as we've seen Ryan Smith and a number of other legal analysts is, in the court, this may have trouble, but the conversation has already been started and doesn't show any signs of slowing down in public.
No doubt about it, Gojo. And here's the thing. I'm hoping that's ultimately what ends up happening. The pressure that mounts against the NFL as a result of this class action suit leads them down a direction where they actually agree to some substantive change to create a more fair and equitable hiring process for black coaching candidates. I've seen a lot of people compare Brian Flores to Kurt Flood, who sued for free agency. And although a lot of other players, not just in baseball, but around sports in general, benefited from those actions, Kurt Flood didn't directly benefit from it. I'm afraid that Brian Flores is going to have a similar fate in the sense that he's not going to have the opportunity to benefit from it, because he's essentially sacrificing his career in order to shed more light and create more public pressure and public awareness on the issue at hand, which is the disparity in hiring black coaching candidates as head coaches. So it's unfortunate that we're doing this is happening. We're not doing it, but the NFL owners are seemingly doing this to Brian Flores based on the allegations that we see. And it reeks of that similar feel that we had around Colin Kaepernick when he first started his stance in protest during the national anthem. And it took us years to realize that Colin Kaepernick was on the right side of history. It took the NFL years to realize that Colin Kaepernick was doing the right thing. And so I'm just hoping that the NFL doesn't have to take years before it realizes what Brian Flores is advocating for is actually the right thing, and it's something that's necessary in order to move the big machine in the direction that it knows it needs to go in.
Kanny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. This again was Amber Wilson with us earlier on the show on just that, what the NFL's response will be to what we've seen.
First thing that's going to happen is the NFL is going to file a motion to dismiss. In that motion to dismiss, they're going to argue that this shouldn't even be handled in a court of law, that this should be handled in arbitration under the CBA. I think that they're probably going to have a pretty strong argument because at the heart of this, it's employment discrimination, and they're going to say anything as it pertains to employment is going to be handled under the CBA, and it's contractually obligated to be sent to arbitration. And arbitration wouldn't mean this goes away for the NFL. It would mean this goes away for us in terms of the media and in terms of us discussing it, because all of a sudden the doors would be closed, whereas obviously it stays in court. It would be public record.
Chris, make no mistake, though, that would be this going away for the NFL, because that's where the discussion is going to put the pressure on them if it's continuing in the media. If, like Brian Flores' lawyer said on Get Up today, they believe they've got other coaches, other people willing to step up with evidence that this has happened to them too on the hiring front, that would keep the conversation in a place that would get a response from all this, and maybe a response that's different from what the NFL already gave.
Well, certainly being able to establish a pattern of behavior would help the cause when it comes to Brian Flores' class action lawsuit, because he's talking about a class of individuals, as Amber Wilson explained to us earlier. But Gojo, I think another group that needs to be identified in all of this and needs to step up and advocate for Brian Flores are the current coaches in the National Football League, black and white. That needs to happen, Gojo, because everybody recognizes that there is an issue when it comes to coaches of color being afforded opportunities to advance through the ranks. And so for us to sit here and to not talk about the elephant in the room, it just doesn't make any sense. Brian Flores, a man of high character, to be painted into a corner and put in this position where he feels like he has no other choice in order to create a fair and equitable process other than to sue the league that provides him opportunities to do the thing that he loves, it just speaks to how bad of an issue the NFL is facing. And it's going to take everyone. It's going to take all of us. Just like those empty slogans say in the end zone, just like the slogans say on the back of helmets, it takes all of us. It's going to take all of the coaches banding together and having Brian Flores' back, because it's not truly a meritocracy, because we know that there are quality, qualified candidates that deserve to have opportunities that are black men in this league coaching. And so the fact that we only have one black head coach out of the 32 jobs that are available and that of the 27 that are occupied, it is a black mark on the National Football League, and something about that has to change. And if you're a head coach in this league and you know that there's a problem, and based on the numbers we do, then you need to step up and say something. You need to support Brian Flores. Even if you know that it's ultimately not going to amount to the NFL, you know, having some judgment in court, this could potentially put more pressure on the NFL to move in the direction that it should, which is creating a better process other than the Rooney Rule, which has proven to fail based on the sham that we see, or the sham that's being alleged from Brian Flores with the New York Football Giants.
Yeah, Chris, it's going to be interesting because you brought this up earlier. Like, next week, we're going to have media days leading up to the Super Bowl. Sean McVay and Zach Taylor, two white guys getting ready to coach in the Super Bowl. Sean McVay's got about as much job security as any coach in the NFL right now, going to his second Super Bowl before the at the age of 36 and doing it with two different quarterbacks here. They could absolutely speak up and say something in support of Brian Flores. But Chris, it seems like the only thing that would really move the needle here is if someone else came forward and said, this has happened to me, I also have evidence of this, because I just wonder, like, the support would be great for Brian Flores, who I ultimately believe isn't going to work again in this league, because again, these are ownership decisions made. I just think the other part of this is really, like, we'd be asking for other people to step forward and provide evidence. That would probably be the thing, right?
Well, I mean, evidence is certainly going to play a part, Gojo, but how much evidence do we actually need? The league is 73% black. You have one black head coach. There is no shortage of former players that want to be a part of the NFL in a coaching capacity or in a front office capacity. And so to only have one black head coach, you mean to tell me out of the thousands of men that have been a part of this league, that we only have one black coach in this day and age that's capable of leading a franchise? Stop it, man. We got to be real with this thing. We want to say it's a meritocracy. We want to believe we got to where we were just based on hard work. But it's clear when others are putting in the same level of work and they have the same capacity, the same bandwidth, they're not presented with the same opportunities that their white counterparts are getting. I outlined what happened with the offensive coordinator position since Andy Reid has been in Kansas City. Doug Peterson was the OC for 3 years, got a head coaching job, won a Super Bowl. Matt Nagy was the offensive coordinator for 1 year, got a job with the Chicago Bears, went to the playoffs a couple of times, and got fired this hiring cycle. Eric Bieniemy has been the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs for the past 4 seasons. Gojo, he can't get a job. What are we missing here? We're trying to parse between, okay, what are the different aspects? Well, what is it about Eric Bieniemy that doesn't qualify him to be a head coach? Sometimes we make this thing too complicated. It seems like the issue or the problem is right in front of our face. It's the owners not being comfortable hiring black men in a head coaching capacity, and something about that has to change. And it's clear the owners are not going to change it in and of themselves.
No, and that's the only reason I bring up proof, Chris, because everything you're saying is right, but that's also everything we've known for years and everything we've been saying for years. And we can say that it's supposed to necessitate change, and it hasn't. And so if we've got all that same stuff, I can't expect more lip service from other coaches who want to come out there and say that if they don't have anything that can ultimately agitate these owners enough to change. That's my worry in all this. Not that you're wrong, but that you're so right and that we've known that for a long time and still nothing has happened. That's been the difficulty on a lot of this front. That'll continue to be the difficulty on this, and that's why I am very excited and very interested to hear what Hugh Jackson's had to say on SportsCenter about what he had go on with the Browns, because while Amber said all these things feel disconnected, some of them feel like they play a part. We'll get to more of that next, among other things, here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Hit us up on the CNG Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. and at Chris Canty 99. But Mike, it's time for us to bring in the man that's responsible for a lot of my viewing content this fall. That would yes. be the director and the executive producer of the Man in the Arena podcast. That is one Gotham Chopra. And Gotham, I know that this has been an incredible undertaking with you producing The Man in the Arena, but I wanted to ask you, with Tom Brady retiring yesterday, just what was the moment you realized when producing this podcast and documentary where you realized the attributes that Tom Brady had that allowed him to have success at the highest levels of the league over the course of a 22-year career?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, the production, thanks for having me, guys. It's fun to be here. You know, the production of this thing has lasted several years, to be honest. Like, you know, I think when we started, I was remembering it was going to be an 8-part series, you know, 8 Super Bowls. And then it became 9, then it became 10 in a whole different city. But you start to see, as you're looking at endless footage and you're watching endless seasons, consistent patterns that formed early on. I think when Tom was young and he was part of this group of guys that, you know, this is, I, you know, if you divide Tom's career almost into 3 phases, and then I look at Tampa as the epilogue, something started to happen in that 2003 2004. He was around guys like Teddy Bruschi and Rodney Harrison, Lawyer Malloy, Mike Vrabel, and something started to really form with those teams that was pretty special. He calls it the edgers, and I think you start to see that DNA. Sorry, guys. You start to see that, you know, across time. And that's part of the DNA of, like, pretty much every championship that came since.
How much of the input from Tom as far as storytelling? Like, did he have an idea of how he wanted this story told? Did he leave that up to you guys here? How much input did he have in all of this, as so many people came off of something like The Last Dance during the summer of 2022 and all the input that they know Michael Jordan had on the way he was portrayed?
Yeah, no, Tom, I mean, very trusting. I've worked with him for a long time, so very trusting, you know, I think in terms of me and just the team that we put together. He's not, you know, I think you see a lot of times, and, you know, I don't want to speak about Michael Jordan because I don't know him, but, like, a lot of the same qualities a guy has on the field, he has off the field. So Tom's, like, surround yourself with, you know, people who know what they're doing, trust them, get on the same page, run the same playbook, but then trust them to to run their parent, you know, to do your job sort of thing. And so Tom really like gave us that freedom, especially look, there's also off season Tom, in season Tom. Once you got in season Tom, I mean, I would send him cuts. He would look at them occasionally and kind of, you know, give some feedback, but never like editorial, you know, cut this or add this or whatever. It was, he's just so focused, you know, on the season. So he was pretty like hands off, let us run with it.
Gotham, I remember at the beginning of the docuseries, it talks about how Tom Brady gets his opportunity after the week two game with the Jets where Drew Bledsoe gets knocked out. There's a lot of speculation on what the Patriots are going to do and what kind of outing he was going to have. And they go out and they destroy the Indianapolis Colts. But in that season, you know, the first couple of months, they're a 5-5 club, and then they go ahead and win every game remaining on their schedule all the way up into their Super Bowl run. But one of the interesting things that I thought about that was the AFC Championship game where Drew Bledsoe has to step back in because Tom Brady's dealing with an injury. And it seems like the two had a relationship that would be better than what you would expect for a young guy supplanting a veteran quarterback that was coming off of a situation where he got a $100 million contract. Can you talk about the role that Drew Bledsoe played in the development of Tom Brady and his success as an NFL quarterback?
Oh, for sure. That's a great moment. I got to confess to you guys, you know, like I think I've said this in the podcast and some of the other stuff. I grew up a huge Patriots fan. Drew Bledsoe was the guy. I know Tom Brady's great and he's the GOAT now. And we can all talk about his legacy. But Drew Bledsoe is the guy who legitimized that organization. Drew Bledsoe and Bill Parcells really turned it from, you know, a laughingstock to some degree to a legit organization, obviously along with Robert Kraft. So, you know, here's this guy, $100 million quarterback. He gets injured, sixth round pick. No one's ever heard of him, comes in. You know, the thing about Tom, and Drew talks about it, he's like, he had a sort of charisma. He had a lot of, you know, things Drew as a veteran, as a guy that the rest of the team, Willie McGinnis talks about it. You know, he was the leader of the team. He saw something in Tom. He took him under his wing. He jokes and he's like, I never thought the guy was going to take my job. But, you know, when you talk to Tom about that season, he's like, I didn't need Drew to tell me how to throw a seam route or an out pattern. What I learned from Drew was like how to be a professional, how to put the team above yourself, because here's this guy who is the team and he has to kind of do the right thing for the team. And that's not easy. And, you know, that's what the series is really about, is like, who are these people along the way that taught him to become over time the GOAT? And that was a really important lesson. You know, Drew Bledsoe, like he's the institution. I mean, he's the greatest quarterback in Patriots history before Tom Brady shows up. And he's making it easier for him, I would say, and making it easier for the team also to accept like this transition. And I think that was a really important thing. And it's more credit to Drew Bledsoe, frankly, than Tom Brady in that early, you know, part of his career.
Gotham Chopra, director and executive producer of Man in the Arena, with us on the hotline on Canty and Golic Jr. And Gotham, for you, religion of sports, the group, the organization you're a part of with Tom Brady, Michael Strahan, what's the goal now from here on out? Tom Brady retired, going to have more time. What are you guys looking to continue to do with religion of sport?
Yeah, you know, look, I've had so much fun, you know, doing all this content around Tom. But, you know, we've always sort of said, we're not the Tom Brady production company. We're not the Michael Strahan production company. You know, we like to tell stories set in the world of sports, but that are bigger than sports. So, you know, there'll probably be more content in the future with Tom, but it's, you know, now bringing Tom in a different role. You asked that question of, you know, was he watching cuts? He wasn't really, he wasn't giving feedback. And I don't expect him to be sitting in the edit room with us, but I think there is a different phase of his life starting. And I know, like, already in the last few days, you know, we've been talking about stuff. We have some other interesting projects. We have something coming up around the World Cup. So there's some interesting stuff. And, you know, Tom is in a rare, I mean, he has a unique point of view, especially in the world of sports. So expect to engage him, you know, in a really different way.
We're all looking forward to seeing what that entails. Gotham, thank you so much. Congrats on all the success with this. And we're looking forward to the projects that you guys have coming up. Going to be really exciting.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Gotham Chopra joining us here on Canty and Golic Jr. We'll be back with more updates about the Brian Flores situation and else here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Danny Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Hit us up on the CNG Twitter line at Mike Golick Jr. at ChrisCandy99. And Gojo, as we continue to try to wrap our minds around the class action lawsuit filed by Brian Flores against the National Football League, against the Denver Broncos, the New York Giants, and the Miami Dolphins, a lawsuit that includes allegations toward the New York Giants based around a text message that Brian Flores received from Bill Belichick, in which Belichick congratulated him for getting the head coaching job, but mixed it up, meant to send the message to Brian Daboll. And this happened days before Flores was set for his final interview in person with the Giants. We also had the allegations going back to 2019 with the Denver Broncos, when he was sitting down with the Broncos brass and they came into the meeting disheveled and unprepared. There was a claim that they had been out the night before. But then you also have the allegations toward the Miami Dolphins. And what seems to be one of the most scathing allegations in the lawsuit filed by Brian Flores, it seems like this is the one that the NFL and Roger Goodell have to have some serious concern about based on what it's alleging and what's being claimed.
Yeah, Chris, because this is the one, competitive integrity, and it's not to make one better or worse than the other, right? Like, these allegations, especially the ones around racism and hiring practices, have been well known for a while. It's just different because we have documentation now. But Chris, we've talked about tanking a lot. Like, in the media, we love talking about this as a strategy here. It's something that was popularized in the NBA. But we thought, all right, be worse for less time and then be in a position to get better quickly. But we always talked about it, and we always made that distinction of that was something that maybe in the front office, the way they went about business, the way they went about roster and personnel moves was part of that. Never with the players and coaches, because that's their livelihood. This, if we've got really this breach in all of it, then Chris, the NFL, who, by the way, now as we move into a world where gambling is more popular than ever, has some serious integrity issues that come down to dollars and cents. And that's the one reason, Chris, I think we gravitate towards this, is because we know the only thing that this league cares about is money and eyeballs.
No doubt about it.
And if you affect that, that's going to be the real thing that creates change.
You're absolutely right, Mike. And there could be a level of criminality in the behavior that is being alleged toward the Miami Dolphins and now with Hugh Jackson, the Cleveland Browns. And that's the thing that NFL is trying to avoid when it comes to third parties, potential government agencies investigating it and finding wrongdoing on the behalf of those owners or those clubs. So that's something that could upset the apple cart when it comes to the NFL being able to protect itself, to protect the brand, to protect the way that they go about their business. Because if it's proven, if there are receipts out there that this actually took place, that owner Stephen Ross propositioned Brian Flores $100,000 per loss in his first season as the Miami Dolphins head coach, and what happened in Cleveland with owner Jimmy Haslam and Hugh Jackson, where a similar incentive was in place, then that's a problem for the NFL, because you're directly undermining the coach's position and the coach's job description, which is to try to do everything that he can, everything within his purview, in order to win football games. And that doesn't seem quite fair when you recognize how hard it is for black coaches to have an opportunity to be head coaches in the National Football League. So there's a disparity in terms of the opportunities that are presented for them to be head coaches, but then also how they're treated in these roles once they get the job.
Yeah, it's one thing to be brought in and have an understanding this is going to take time to build. We've seen that was the Brian Flores contract when he got down to Miami, was an extra year tacked on with the understanding this might take a little while. But if all of a sudden that plan happens, there's an understanding that losing will be involved, but then you're fired for the losing expected, or in Brian Flores' case, you're fired for winning more than they wanted to, this all of a sudden creates an optic that it is impossible for a black coach to satisfy this. Now, you mentioned Hugh Jackson, the former Browns head coach, who had accused the team of similar allegations during 2016 and 17 surrounding tanking. This was Hugh on the 6 o'clock SportsCenter talking to L. Duncan earlier today about that team and how it was built.
What I was trying to make sure people understood is that we were paid for, you know, you're going to see it as losing, but the way the team was built, there was no chance really to win and win at a high level. You're in a situation to where what you have to do is do the best you can. My record that year was 1-15. There was a 4-year plan that was crafted. And I have documentation of that, that I think any coach would kind of cringe at if he saw it, because it talked about things that had nothing to do with winning, aggregate rankings, being the youngest team, having so many draft picks. None of those things are what lead to winning. Teams that win don't have a lot of draft picks.
And Chris, again, for the sake of this conversation, what Brian Flores is alleging, I was offered $100,000 per loss, told to work less hard and all of that, sounds a lot different than Hugh Jackson there talking about the idea of hoarding draft picks and everything. That sounds a lot less damning than what Brian Flores laid out.
But it really doesn't when you consider what they're asking Hugh Jackson to stomach, Gojo, because his job is to try to win games, and they want to be aggressive in terms of acquiring players that can help him do his job, guys that can be difference makers on the field. And when you realize you're being handed a loaded deck or stacked deck against you, then that's got to be frustrating. And you wonder how many coaches, how many white coaches, you know, counterparts are being treated to a similar agenda or a similar plan. It just doesn't feel like that's the case when you survey the landscape of the National Football League. You're asking Hugh Jackson or you're asking Brian Flores to, in effect, lose games for draft picks. And we know that that was a part of the strategy with Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta. They made no bones about it. They were bringing a baseball approach, analytics, and if we're going to be bad, we're going to be really bad so we can get transformative players and a lot of draft capital. So it was one of those things that confirms what we suspected would be the approach that the Cleveland Browns would take. But in all of that, you penalize Hugh Jackson by firing him after going 1-31 over 2 years because he didn't do enough winning. That's the part that doesn't seem quite fair in this. It seems like they mistreated Hugh Jackson. They allowed him to be the face of all of this losing, somebody that you could pinpoint and put all of the blame on. Meanwhile, this was the plan and the doing of the front office. They, in effect, undermined the head coach's opportunities to win games.
They did. But without proof, I just worry about what this is actually going to change. Because you're right, we knew that. And the optics of all this are going to stay there. David Culley is the latest in that down in Houston. Brought in for a one-year control burn as they try to get to better days. And you see consistently the black coach left out of the other side of that plan. That's going to be there. But again, Hugh Jackson, it seems right now, with less in the definitive, I'm talking pay for losing, that was accused of the way Brian Flores did with the Miami Dolphins. We'll get into more of Hugh Jackson's comments and everything else that's happened in the world of sports. It has been a wild day. Stick with us. We'll do that after this word from Wendy's. Right now, guys at Wendy's, see what all the hype's about with their new guaranteed hot and crispy fries. We're talking real natural cut potatoes, perfectly sprinkled in sea salt, and guaranteed to be hot and crispy down to the very last fry. Or they'll replace them. These aren't just the typical fries you add to a meal. These are fries worth adding a meal to. So abandon the old cold and soggy. Head to Wendy's today, where your fries are guaranteed to be hot and crispy. At participating U.S. Wendy's. Back after this, Canning and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio.
Tomorrow on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. The Rams went all in, and now they're headed to the Super Bowl. GM Les Snead joins the guys to talk about the moves they made and how they're paying off. Les Snead, tomorrow morning with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max at 9:30 Eastern on ESPN Radio. This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canning. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Got to give a shout out to all the guests that came through on today's show. Amber Wilson, who's ESPN radio host and a lawyer by trade, giving us the latest on Brian Flores' class action lawsuit and the merits therefore. Also, ESPN senior NFL writer of The Undefeated, Jason Reed, giving us his perspective on everything happening in the landscape of the National Football League. Also, author, retired anchor, and reporter at CBS USA in D.C., Bruce Johnson, talking to us about the Washington football team changing their name to the Washington Commanders. And then, of course, Gautam Chopra, the director and executive producer for Man in the Arena. If you missed any of it, go to the Canning and Golic Jr. podcast, download and subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. But Gojo, we have now reached a portion of our show where it's time for us to go three and out.
Sometimes it's the worst. Sometimes it's the best. Either way, we'll get you straight with everything you need to know. This is 3 and Out.
3 and Out is brought to you by Indeed. Hiring in a flash? Visit Indeed.com/credit And it's National Signing Day, part due today in the world of college football. And there have been a lot of accusation and conversation about Jimbo Fisher. He's got the number one overall class this year, and by some ranking systems, the number one class ever signed since we started tracking this stuff. And a lot of people, coaches, message boards, posters, and others, have had questions about how he got to that. Well, Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M's head coach, had the time today at the podium to answer.
Here's what I'm going to say, and this is point blank. This is point blank to the because here's my problem. There is no $30 million fund. There is no $5 million. There is no $10 million. This is garbage, okay? And it does. It pisses me off that people, and here it comes from a site called Bro Bible by a guy named Slice Bread. Then everybody runs with it. So it's written on the internet as gospel. How irresponsible is that? You got, I'm going to tell you, there's some very reputable writers in college football and sports that wrote it and have said it and have done things. That's unbelievable to me. When I first heard it, I laughed. I said, oh, yeah, what a clown. I mean, I didn't even think anything of it. Of course, I don't have social media. And it kept building, and lately I've heard more about it. To me, it's insulting to the players that we recruited that's why they would come here. You ever been to a game here? You ever come to school here and see the education? You ever talk about the 12th man, the Aggie Network when you're done? There ain't a better university in this country. And it's insulting.
He went on to call some of the coaches that had made comments about this clowns, which, you know, Lane Kiffin made some very public comments about this. Chris, he seems mad.
Yeah, he seems mad. But then he also goes on to highlight the hypocrisy when talking about what happened with Alabama quarterback Bryce Young and all the NIL money that he had lined up before he even taken a snap under center this season. So, I mean, listen, it is what it is. This is the way of the world in college sports now, and all of these coaches are going to have to adjust to it. You can be salty that Jimbo pulled in the number one recruiting class in the country, but don't be mad at him when you got the same 24 hours and you can go out there and recruit yourself. Better.
I would just say this to Jimbo, too. It's not illegal. Like, you don't got to be mad if that was the case in this spot. And I'm not going to accuse Jimbo of anything, but, like, it's not illegal for those players to get money for their name, image, and likeness anymore. And if it just happens to be wrapped around all this, it might even be worth celebrating. But what do I know?
I can promise you Walter Nolan, the defensive tackle that they got out of Tennessee, is going to be getting a whole lot of NIL money. I can promise you that.
Speaking of NIL money here on Canty and Golic Jr., this breaking news from the boardroom. Bronny James Jr., LeBron James Jr.'s son, has filed trademark applications for BJ Jr., whoa, Bronny, and Bronald, and plans to enter the world of NFTs, video games, and apparel, according to Josh Gerben. Chris, what the hell is Bronald?
I don't know where he came up with that one from. Is it a combination of his first name and middle name? It seems like there's more to that story because I don't know on its face why he came up with that one. But it's definitely something that's noteworthy, and because it's so unique, we're all going to remember it. So if he wants to go by Bronald moving forward, I think that's something that everybody can get on board with just because it's so different. Now, you got to have the game to be able to back it up because it does sound a little ridiculous, but we'll see where it ends up going.
Listen, he's already been balling at Sierra Canyon here. We know part of the conversation's always been Chris. LeBron James says he somewhat regrets giving his son his name because of the outsized expectation. So they've gone with Bronny Jr. Bronald is an even further departure. So if you're looking to continue the rebrand as he gets older, job well done, especially if he becomes a Bronald's All-American.
You had to go with the pun, right? You had to fold it in there somehow, some way. It was too
for
you to resist.
I did mess it up because it should be a Bronald McDonald's All-American, Bronald and I couldn't McDonald's. Stick the landing on that one.
Well,
I guess McBronald's.
Close. McBronald's? Okay.
Ah, man, this is
it kind of reminds
you
of that scene from Coming to America, McDowell's versus McDonald's.
He is the golden arches. I have the golden arcs here. And I have stepped all over a joke of my own creation at the expense of a young man who's going to make more money before the age of 18 than I have made in my entire life. That is the game that we have stepped into. So congratulations to Bronald and his family for all of the riches that are coming their way. I am sure our friends to the north will have something to say about this. So stick around here on ESPN Radio. Spain and Fitz got you covered coming up next.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.